Well, tonight we're going to be really mentally tough and enjoy this time together. I thought about trying to get somebody to take my place, but on short notice that's hard to do. So, this is one of those where we're all in it together type of thing. We started off talking about maintaining positive energy. We talked about the low positive, low negative, high negative, and in the high positive states, you want to fluctuate back and forth between the high positive and low positives where you want them to be to maintain production. And then we started working our way around the wheel, talked about attitude, the idea that emotion follows thought. You're always in problems if your thought follows your emotion, I'll tell you that. Many a young lady has figured that out too late. If you want to develop a positive attitude, top performance is a result of being in the positive emotional state. And positive emotion follows positive thought. And so the essence of mental toughness, which is what we're talking about, is that my attitudes and emotions are intimately connected. And I assume full responsibility for my attitudes. That sounds pretty scriptural. That's what God expects, is us to take full responsibility. Then we talked about motivation, developing passion and purpose in your life. And great performances are not motivated by external factors, but by an internal passion. Ultimately, it's got to be the joy of the performance itself. Goals can be out there, but actually during the performance, you just got to love what you're doing. If you don't love what you're doing, you're not going to do it very well. So what motivates you doesn't matter that much in comparison to what motivates you while you perform. See, it's in the dark day. It's the day that you don't want to do it. It's the morning you don't want to get up. It's the phone call that you don't want to make. And still having the ability to do that. That's where it comes in. And being able to do it during those times. So mental toughness is the actual ability to summon the internal motivation necessary for being at one's best. So, one of the things you can use is you can just kind of work through this little process here to determine what your passion is. See, and let me just say something here in passing about passion, and that is that you got to really be honest with yourself. I mean, what you know should motivate you isn't always what motivates you. And so you better figure that out. A lot of girls go to college, they say, to find a career. Actually, really, they're going to find a husband. And the more honest they are about that, the better off they're going to be. See, so you gotta be really honest when you're trying to sort this stuff through. Great question. If they didn't pay me to do what I do, would I still do it? Ken Rose said, "What? Are you kidding me?" So then we started talking about visualization last week. Basically, what you see is what you get. God actually set aside the largest section of the brain for the processes of visualization. And any finished carpenter can see what that kitchen's going to look like before he ever, drives a nail. I'm always amazed at what the human brain can actually conceive and bring into existence. Every skyscraper, every bridge. See, that existed in somebody's mind before it was actually built. But ultimately, see, God set aside those visualization portions of the brain so that we can actually see Christ in glory and be motivated by faith, ultimately. And it's true, as a man thinks within himself, so he is. And so, in order to perform, you have to develop at least three strong images. Number one, you got to develop an image where you picture yourself as relaxed. You got to be able to switch into relaxed mode. It's a means of conserving energy while maintaining a positive attitude. Energy is a limited quantity, just like money and time is. And so you got to learn how to conserve it. And so learning how to be relaxed when you're supposed to relax, you'll be able to flip the relax switch on. Said, okay, I'm relaxed. You need a good image of yourself to develop that. Same way you need a good image of yourself energized, you know, where you're chucking along, getting a lot of work done. And finally, you know, you need one of your finest hour. They say these can actually be composites if you need them. But having that strong image, see, and being able to train your mind to go there for a performance is huge. And those are things you can draw on. So the ultimate power of visualization lies in your self-image. See, people tend to live up, or shall we say live down, sometimes to their images. That's why Christ in the Scripture had us bury the image of the failure in the waters of immersion and resurrect an entirely new self out of the water. And over and over and over in different ways, He keeps telling us who this new self is, how valuable this new self is, how important this new self is, how much God loves this new self, how much this new self can accomplish, what this new self can lay aside, and what the new self can put on. See, so that's all these other things are actually designed by God to funnel into that very point right there. Thoughts or comments before we continue? In the end, what you see is more than what you get. What you see is what you can become. There's a guy by the name of Jim Spinotti. He says, the me I see is the me I'll be. That's a good saying. Tonight we're talking about exercise, and physically fitter means mentally tougher. You know, and so that's over there about at the 4 o'clock position on the little circle here. And some strategies. If you exercise regularly, it'll relax tension, it'll elevate your mood, it'll increase your confidence, and actually build mental stamina. I know the kids I used to take jogging with me back when we had this school still at Garfield Street. It was a 1 3/8 mile around the loop. And, you know, I had about 8 kids that had actually run that. And that really developed those kids' mental toughness. I mean, of course, you get about 3/4 of a mile away, and you still got to get back to the church building. There was only one way to get there. And the thing is, it's quicker to run it than it is to walk it. So, you know, the kids develop mental toughness by doing that. And a lot of them still jog to this day. You know, and it's just kind of interesting to me to look back and see how that worked. But physical toughness translates automatically into mental toughness. You know, the way I try to illustrate it sometimes is, you know, we have a lot of emphasis on these video games, you know, Xboxes and PlayStations, and I don't know what all they got. And, you know, I did see one the other day, and I was actually absolutely amazed at the graphics. And it was somebody playing football, and they told me, oh, this one's out of date. This is a used one that somebody gave away. This is nothing compared to the up-to-date graphics. So, I mean, they must be pretty lifelike out there. But if you're playing football on the PlayStation, the only physical exercise you're getting is reaving on those joysticks. And reaving on joysticks is not the same as pushing the body down the field. And so, you know, anybody can live a life above the rim in the PlayStation world. But to be able to live life above the rim on the hardwood is something else. And so the physical fitness is actually a place where there's a training ground for the mind. I mean, the body has a certain natural resistance to forward motion. It's called the laws of physics, you know, laws of momentum. A body at rest tends to stay at rest. A body in motion tends to stay in motion. So it's going to take energy to get that body that's at rest in motion. And that's training for mental toughness. So the Apostle Paul said, I discipline my body and make it my slave so that after I preach to others, I myself will not be disqualified. You can't control your body. You sure can't control your mind. On the other hand, he said, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. For bodily discipline is only of little profit, but godliness is profitable for all things. Now, I do want you to notice that bodily discipline is a profit. But the key thing is its ability to translate over into godliness, to be able to have the discipline. See, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. And so don't discount the value. You know, sometimes I heard people say, well, because bodily discipline's of little profit, I don't need any. Not what the scripture's saying. It's just making a comparison. And okay, thanks. Appreciate you guys. So you take chess, for example. Chess appears to be totally mental, okay? I mean, you've seen these guys sitting there playing chess. It doesn't look like they're doing much. Okay? Well, Bobby Fischer is a world chess championship, 1972, okay? And to get ready for the match, a long time ahead of time, he had 1 hour tennis lessons. He lifted weights, he jumped rope, he pedaled the bag, and he punched the bag. In an ordinary 6 hour game of chess, the professionals will lose between 4 or 5 pounds. See, there's some reasons for that, okay? I mean, there's, in mathematical terms, there's a lot of algorithms going on in the brain trying to figure out all the possible moves that your opponent's going to make, okay? And a chess master cannot skillfully deploy his mental skills unless he has physical stamina. See, mental work is physical work. You know, just ask Mrs. Elise Tuck if mental work is physical work. See, and performance requires energy. So there is a direct relationship between physical stamina and mental performance. It's not necessarily brain versus brawn, mind versus matter, or jock versus nerd. Okay? The brain makes up only about 2% of the body mass, but it uses 25% of the body's energy. So, that's a lot of energy. I mean, you think about it. You got a computer up here. I enjoy going through the computer museum on North 7th. And I remember they have the computer, the first computer that the university used there in the computer museum, and that used Fortran. And I remember having to program in Fortran and then take the program down, and they'd have a punch card. You know, somebody, lady punch cards, and they'd feed those, and your program would come back, kicked it out, you missed a comma. But I remember when that was replaced by the Sigma 7. The Sigma 7 took up the whole basement of the library in the university campus. Now, today, your average laptop has more computing power than the Sigma 7 did. But that's where it was at the time. But you think, okay, what's the biggest problem with memory in computers? Heat. You know, trying to get the heat away. And, you know, you start doing gigaflops, you know. There's a lot of heat generated. Okay, well, you think of something here that it's magnitudes better than any computer that has been developed. That's going to take a lot of energy to run that. You got to have a good heating and cooling system and a tremendous network here to make this work. So that's why the brain is actually using about 25% of your energy supply, a fourth of the blood supply in any given moment coursing through the brain. So physical activities actually alter then the chemistry of the blood, which, as you can see, then is going to alter the mood that the brain's getting fed, okay? So whatever affects the chemistry has immediate mental consequences. So your mental performance state reflects a chemical balance among hormones and neurotransmitters. See, for example, norepinephrine, it's both a hormone and a neurotransmitter, okay? It does certain hormonal things inside the body, but it's also one of those chemicals that's in the synapses between the nerve cells. Now, without it, you're asleep, okay? And too much, you're keyed up and edgy. You know, with the proper amount, you're ready to perform. Others are like acetylcholine, dopamine. You can probably guess some relationship to dopamine, to epinephrine, serotonin, endorphins, and the others, okay? And they all work inside this very complex system here, and they greatly affect your mood. Now, every day, millions of Americans adjust their chemical balance with drugs, caffeine, alcohol, prescription pharmaceuticals, or illegal substances such as heroin or cocaine. I find it interesting that caffeine is there. I'm not a coffee drinker. But once in a while, if I'm driving, I'll get Diet Pepsi or something to try to stay awake, you know. And it's just amazing how if you don't drink that stuff very often and then you drink some, you know, I mean, you really notice. It does keep you awake, you know, and keep you wired. And of course, if you got used to a dosage of caffeine, it probably takes more and more over a period of time to give you the same kick. I don't know. Judging from the number of people that buy lattes and such, I'd say that, have to have more and more kick. I'm not sure about that. But, of course, I don't recommend heroin or cocaine. But they will alter your mood, okay? But they function by changing the chemical balance in the bloodstream. That's what they do. So, for example, cocaine increases the body's production of norepinephrine. And a line or two energizes the mind and the body for a little while. A little bit more leads to frazzled nerves. There's a word for it, I think, called strung out, if my memory is correct. Okay. So, they do work. Okay. Heroin and the other opiates are chemical cousins of the natural things in your brain and blood called endorphins. So, endorphins and opiates block the transmission of pain signals to the brain. Now, one of the best ways to get endorphins in your system is to have a long run. See, someplace down there, the body decides that it's not going to send any more pain signals to the brain, so that you enjoy the last 6 miles of the marathon. And that's actually really the way it works. And actually, then the guys have, you know, come, they call it runner's high. You know, when they come off the race, they've actually got a runner's high. It's due to the natural generation of the endorphins in the system. So inside the limbic system, what they do is they stimulate the pleasure centers. That's why the opiates and other things are so addictive. See, because once you get started, you like that pleasure. See, and then, of course, it creates a dependency here after a while. And so they're powerful. Now, getting into the ideal performance state doesn't really require poppy juice, folks. Okay? You don't have to do it that way. See, physical exercise is actually better in adjusting the chemical balance of the nervous system. So when you exercise, see, your body actually produces more of the natural endorphins, see, which give you the good feeling. Motion is a good line. Motion controls emotion. See, sometimes when people are struggling with their attitude or depression, things like that, you know, if you can help them to get to where they can actually regularly exercise on a physical basis, it helps them a lot. Those of you who are, normally exercise quite a bit, you know, if you don't get to, you know, how much it affects you. See, so there is a definite connection between regular exercise and your attitude. So On the high positive, you're calm, but you're energized. You know, you're responsive, you're engaged, you're coordinated and graceful. Your actions are appropriate to the situation. If you're over in the high negative, you're tense, you're edgy, your movements are jerky, they're difficult to control. Responses are often inappropriate. If you think of a basketball team, for example, and the guy's edgy and he's going in for a slam dunk and he's really focused on winning the game, see, he's liable to overpower that thing and slam it off the back rim and shoot that about 15 feet in the air, see. Whereas, the team that's winning a lot of times, and they know they're going to win, they're calm, they relax, they're just making those smooth motions, and down she goes. See? That's an example. Now, the low negatives, slow, stiff, halting responses, poor coordination. That's me playing golf. The poor coordination, can really strike if you get frustrated. I mean, you probably heard about the guy that Paul Harvey told about, the guy in Scotland, he's playing golf, kept hitting the ball into the water, finally got mad and threw his clubs in. Went home, thought about it, came back, dived in the pool to get his clubs, and drowned. It was a bad day. But that's a true story. That's definitely no low negative. Low positive is relaxed, maybe a little lethargic, unperturbed, open, at ease. Just got exactly the right position on the couch. That's a low negative or low positive as far as physical is concerned. So many daily challenges push you toward the high negative. You probably noticed that. I had to stop and get some anti-malarial medicine for going to Ghana, and I was there first, but there was some guy, and he was in a hurry, and he was kind of a grouchy old guy, and so he wanted his prescription. He wanted it right now, and so they dug it out for him. He said, "Where's my wife's?" And they said, "Well, we didn't see it here. Should be there." So she's trying to be nice, and she looks it up on the computer screen. She said, "I'm sorry, but it wasn't called in." "Well, get on it. Same as mine." And I kind of drift around the building to look at pictures of Bozeman in 1905. And they got a really neat picture of what used to be the paint pot in the Texaco station there in Vans IGA. But I came back, and then they're finishing up, and then they take care of me. But I'm thinking, how'd you like to be the lady waiting on this guy? Just trying to, keep it positive and going. The customer's always right. And, even if he's, way off of being, he's still right, And so there's challenges like that that can push you toward the high negative. It's called "What a Day I Had." Frustrations mount, tension builds. As nervous tension builds, it's reflected in increased muscular tension. You've probably noticed that. Neck gets tight, back gets tight, the shoulders sore, all the stuff that goes with it. So releasing one kind of tension will release the other. And so the following actually worked well for control, release of muscle and nervous tension. Now, this Mentally Tough book is written, remember, it's the secrets of winning at sports applied to winning at business. So a lot of these guys got desk jobs. And they're kind of approaching a little bit from the perspective that the guy's got a desk job here. So we call it the enhanced shoulder shrug. You clench your fists, just tense your arms and your legs, lift your shoulders as high as they go, Hold it for 10 to 15 seconds, you know. Then slowly release. You know, repeat this a few times, you know. And the tension automatically goes away. Actually, if you try it, it does. You know, now, I write a lot of my bolts and backs and other stuff here at the school. And the right way I write my stuff is I type it directly into the computer. I mean, I just sit down, I type it, and don't have to make many corrections by God's grace. I can pretty well sit down and write it out. Well, what'll happen is my neck and shoulders and stuff will get kind of tired from leaning over that keyboard and typing. So, nice thing about doing it during school hours, there's always a few students that you have to go check on. See, so about that time, then I can get up and, you know, kind of stretch out and relax a little bit and go check on a few students. And it all works good. See, everybody's got to have some relaxing way to do it. Another one is you cross your arms around your chest and squeeze all the air out of your lungs for 8 seconds. And if you don't keel over, then you relax and inhale. As you extend your arms upward and outward, and you repeat that 3 times. That'll help. You can do desk isometrics. You know, put your, get a couple chairs there, and do dips on, the chairs. That'll work. Leg lifts, stretches, all kinds of stuff that you can do, just to kind of give you a little relaxation. See, if you can release that tension, it increases your productivity. Now, sometimes it's really difficult to get into a task. We have another word for it. It's called procrastination. Okay? And, now most of us here have known other people who've procrastinated when we were hoping that they would get something done. And so it would have been the time for them maybe to do something kind of physical, get the momentum going, get the heartbeat up, get more oxygen coursing through the brain. So it gives you more courage to dive into that task. Gives them more courage to dive into the task that they've been procrastinating about. So that would be really good advice for them to take. Take an exercise break. Works. A few minutes of vigorous activity stimulates norepinephrine production and makes you more alert and energized. At the same time, serotonin and endorphin levels rise, ensuring that tension doesn't rise with it. See, the natural exercise actually has your body chemicals balanced. See, so if you just get the norepinephrine production, see, that's where you get nervous and tension and edgy. But if you get the serotonin in there, which is kind of a calming one, and then the endorphins, the feel-good ones, see, then you're relaxed, but your performance is high. And you breathe more deeply, see, as your heart pumps more blood, causing your brain to receive more energy. Remember, 25% of your blood's going through your brain. So if you increase your heartbeat from 46 up to 68, so you're actually increasing the amount of blood flow through the brain. And the more blood flow, the more oxygen. The more oxygen you got, the better thinking you are. Another advantage of regular exercise, just as a side note, is it really increases the number of red corpuscles you have in your blood. It's your red corpuscles that carry oxygen. So a person that will exercise like, 4 to 5 times a week, minimum of 30 minutes per day, they will often have twice as many red corpuscles in their system as a person who doesn't exercise. That's quite a difference, the amount of oxygen getting to the brain for alertness and things like that. Another thing is when you physically exercise, both sides of your body involved, see, which stimulates both sides of the brain. See, you got what they call two hemispheres that are linked together by something called the corpus callosum. Now, men especially are lateral. That is, they operate with one side of the brain at the time. And so, Gary Smalley, in his older Love is a Decision presentation on marriage, he talks about how, you know, the left brain, left side of the brain, it's the one that can go down and blow a rabbit off the trail and not feel anything. See, whereas women have a harder time with that because the emotions about the rabbit over there on the right-hand side of the brain. Growing up on the ranch, you know, if you had too many cats around, you know, what you did, you just went and knocked them in the head. One's too many. Well, I can't say as I disagree with that, but, you know, I'm trying to be a little bit politically correct here, Tom. But, you know, we used to, our neighbors, they wouldn't kill our cats. So we'd be down there milking our cows, and there'd be 26 or 30 cats all lying in there. And so if you could, you know, you'd catch a litter of kittens and just knock them in the head. Now, that really freaks, you know, the people for the ethical treatment of animals out. You know, but see, the left brain can do that, no problem. And because men are more lateral, they tend to concentrate more. That is, you know, in the assembly, for example, family can be sitting there, kids can be creating a ruckus on the on the chairs, and dad doesn't notice it. He really doesn't, because he was, you know, bilaterally locked in on the message. Because, you know, that's what people do in the assembly, they pay attention to the message. He was really locked in. Whereas the wife is more likely to notice all the things that the kids are doing because both sides of her brain are functioning. And that's true. But because in women's case, because both sides of the brain are functioning, they have a harder time concentrating, have a harder time blocking it out. And but sometimes, see, the problem is as a man, you know, you're over there in the left brain, and what you need is over in the right brain. And so sometimes, see, this is where the exercise helps, because see, when you're doing things, see, both your left and your right side are working, and that gets both halves of the brain involved. And so sometimes that creative piece of information needed over on the right side meshes with that logical piece that you had on the left brain, and then you can solve the problem, see. So there's really a lot to this if you're interested in being creative and in solving problems. Thoughts or comments here? Ken.
It's also true that using half your brain is better than not using any of your full brain, right?
Absolutely.
That's a creative comment. Yeah, we're always glad when somebody's using at least part of their brain. Tom.
I've always stood on, I don't use my left or my right side of my brain because she can read the other half.
Maybe she can read both halves. No, I gave up trying to read Lana's mind. I just failed too many times, so I just gave up. But she's really good at reading mine, and which is actually a blessing, because that means that she usually knows ahead of time what I'm going to need before I need it, before I know I need it. Great. Further comments, Herb.
Well, working in fast food, I've got a lot of experience dealing with mental issues. If you're there for a long time, it'll either wreck you or you'll develop a good way of dealing with it. But two important principles I've learned about are momentum and synergy. I mean, momentum means just, you know, getting that going and keeping it going every day, hour and every day. And synergy is, I found that if you'll work in one area, or if you're having trouble working in one area, you sidestep it and work with something else, and that'll actually improve what's going on in your head on the other area. So that ties into the whole body and mind and everything you do, really.
Is that thinking outside the bun? Oh, sorry, excuse me. Other comments? No, that's a good point, Herb. Okay, so need to stimulate both sides of the computer's brain here. Maybe the battery gave up. Okay, now sometimes you need pick-me-ups for when you're running out of steam. Okay. Not that that ever happens to anybody around here, but yeah. See, rope jumping, for example, with an imaginary rope for 2.5 minutes. Have you ever tried jumping with an imaginary rope? I mean, I'll stimulate your brain right there. Try it. Yeah. I don't know if you'd want your coworkers watching, though. You know, about the time the boss steps in for a performance review, and you know, what are you doing? Jumping rope. So you maybe need to have everybody, you know, kind of forewarned or forearmed or something like that. See if this helps. Yep. See, even batteries need pick-me-ups. Lithium's good, but it's not permanent. So another one is do some bent knee sit-ups, all 50 or 100. How long has it been since you've done 50 or 100 bent knee sit-ups? Muscle stretching, you know, good for the back, arms, leg. Run in place for 5 to 10 minutes. Probably should warn the boss, you know, you do these sort of things. You know, what are you doing? Running in place for 10 minutes. Why are you doing that? Well, it allows me to focus more on this new contract. Okay, we'll expect results. But physical exercise is a practical short-term tactic. Emphasize short-term for controlling your performance state. It's something you can use, see, to move. Long-term exercise can do even more. So in other words, the five-minute rope jumping, that'll help you right then. Your long-term exercise really gives you some benefits. Good body tone enhances self-confidence. It's a factor when you're making your presentation or, you know, going to talk to people or whatever it is you're doing. The process of building your body tone requires a succession of incremental steps. Setting goals and achieving them builds confidence even faster than it builds muscles. The thing about physical, remember, it's measurable. If I'm trying to increase my distance when I'm jogging, I move up one telephone pole a day, out there on the road. See, just another telephone, and then next day another one. Be amazed at, most of the time it's 5 telephone poles per half mile. Okay, it's not always because they're not consistent in that, but it's ballpark. 5 telephone poles per get you another half mile one way. Okay, so you add 10 telephone poles, you added a mile one way. That's 2 miles extra because you got to go up and back. See, but just incremental steps like that. Is how you increase anything, see? And then the ability to set the goal, see, it's very physical, it's measurable. I tell people one of the main reasons I jog is so I know I did something measurable that day. Most of what I do, there's no direct relationship between how much work I put in today and the results. None whatsoever. I mean, long term, there's some sort of relationship, but generally, it's like the Apostle Paul said, I planted, Apollos watered, but God causes the growth. So, my job is to plant and water, And whether there's any harvest, that's up to God. So I'm doing something physical, so it gives me something measurable. And that helps me then maintain a positive attitude because I got something measurable in today. Actually, I kind of like printing on occasion just for that same reason. You know, to me, it's kind of exciting. You know, you bring in, you know, you got a stack of paper this high on the right-hand end of the press, and you get to watch it move and come out the other end. You know, it goes down on one side, comes out the other, and it's measurable. You know, usually I do about, when I'm printing, it's about 100 per minute. Yeah. It's helpful. Physical things are measurable, so exercise is one of those measurable things that you can do. It's something you can set goals in, something you can achieve goals, and something you can record. It'll build your overall attitude and start developing a pattern of success in your life. And the ultimate confidence of mental toughness comes from developing the stamina to meet sustained challenges, what the New Testament, Romans chapter 5, calls proven character. You know, in working with horses, you know, horses have character too. And, you know, we had a horse that just couldn't perform. You know, I mean, they were pretty good on the, you know, prancing around the field or something like that. But when you're down in the brush trying to get some old bull, Angus bull out of the brush, you really need a horse that's got all-day staying power. And the horses that didn't have that all-day staying power, we said they just didn't have any bottom to them. They didn't have the ability to keep going. You know, we as Christians need to be the kind of people that have this staying power. One of the things I can tell you is being increasingly ripped out generation after generation is the ability to make commitments and keep them. You know, to have the staying power to say, do what you say you're going to do and to stay with it. Part of that has to do with the education system. I mean, when you got, like in school districts like Chicago, where year after year they graduate their seniors, and one quarter of the seniors can't read their diploma. And that's at least according to Paul Hardy. And then you got another 50% that didn't even graduate. I mean, it tells you a lot right there. A guy by the name of Roger Sherman from Connecticut, one of the greatest Americans, he made sure that it was implemented in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, or Section 10, part of which has to do with the fact that nothing but gold or silver can be accepted by the states. And he did that to stop inflation. And after the Constitution was ratified and he had the stable currency, George Washington wrote a letter to Roger Sherman saying that he noticed a tremendous difference in the character of the American people. That where they had a stable currency, now it was worth their time to begin to have their principles of frugality. And as a result, they developed discipline and a long-term perspective. When you got a society that anticipates inflation, then you got to get it now. Okay, now how many companies advertise just in those various terms, get it now? And so what that does, and it's even sometimes called the now generation, what that does, see, is that destroys that ability to keep commitments. It rips the bottom out of people. And so the result is you have a people overall that don't have proven character, and that's why it's so difficult for them to become Christians and stay Christians. And that's why the megachurch movement has a lot of play out there, because I could get literature every week, you know, four-color. We had stuff in preparation for the Advent season. And coming in, you know, you could buy four-color stuff from Cliff's competitors out there. all matching, you know, matching envelopes, matching postcards, you know, I mean, it was pretty slick. And the theme of those was, we promise you, if you visit us during this season, we will never ask you to commit to anything. I mean, they actually say that right on the literature. See, that, I mean, that's playing right into this generation. On the other hand, see, if you're going to be a Christian, then you need to develop staying power. And staying power through some pretty tough stuff. You know, you look at the first century church. You know what they went through? Now, nerve cells and muscle cells both get their energy from the same source, glucose and oxygen carried into the blood. Glucose is your basic sugar. And what happens is the cell is a little engine. And the little engine uses the oxygen out of the bloodstream to, in a complicated chemical process, burn the glucose and get energy. See, that's why your body is 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit under normal conditions, okay? And so oxygen comes from respiration, see, while the body produces glucose from various foods. See, nearly everything you eat at some point is broken down into glucose or, to a lesser extent, to proteins. And so when the two are combined, that energy is released. So ample supplies of both oxygen and glucose are required for the brain to perform its rest. For example, if a guy's running a marathon and he hits the wall, what happens is, in places like the back of these calves, he ran out of the glucose. See, all the readily available glucose is gone. And so what the body does is it starts taking, there's another similar sugar-type substance there called glycogen. And the body starts taking the glycogen and breaking it down and using it for fuel. Okay, but that's very painful, okay? Now, if you don't get enough oxygen to your brain, you have a similar breakdown. Except it's a lot more serious in the brain because that's where any thinking is going on. And so you got to have both. You got to have oxygen and glucose. Now, for example, if a person is a diabetic, for example, and they have a seizure or event or whatever you want to call it, see, part of the problem is not enough glucose or too much glucose, one or the other, inside the brain. Generally not enough. And the hypoglycemia, you got the opposite problem. So you get sugar and oxygen out of balance, you got problems. And so that's why those types of diseases are a serious problem to a person's thinking processes. I better put this one back up there. So the world throws challenges at us whether we're rested or not. Probably noticed that. And so the only way to guarantee readiness is to build up a reservoir of energy. That's that increased stamina that you have. See, that's ability to call on those reserves. And so there is a way to enlarge the supply of both glucose and oxygen. It's called aerobic exercise. Now, if I go out here and I run a 100-meter dash, that's anaerobic. Well, it depends on how fast I ran it. You know, but if I could do it in somewhat less than 15 seconds, it'd be anaerobic. That is, I'd just be simply running on the energy already in the system. Okay? Now, what happens, you know, you're anaerobic when you first start running, but a little bit after a little bit, it switches over to aerobic. Okay? And usually the guys that are going to run a race, a lot of times they'll warm up just a little bit so that they get themselves over to the aerobic side. And what happens, see, is now the air you're breathing is working right directly with the whole rest of your system. And so it's deep breathing for extended periods. You know, that's why they call aerobics, you know, the little thing, exercises that they have based to your favorite music. And it makes more red blood cells, which bring oxygen to the brain. So what aerobic exercise does is it improves respiratory efficiency. Air is 21% oxygen. A typical person has 19% oxygen when he exhales, while the aerobic exerciser has only 17% oxygen. He's twice as efficient. See, because his body is conditioned to be working that way. See, he's getting more oxygen per puff. Okay, is what it boils down to. Okay, and it provides more glucose. See, aerobic exercises raises the body's habitual glucose demand. Thus, the steady flow of energy rises, and so there's no fight or flight reaction upon challenge. So your body's accustomed to stepping up to a higher challenge because it's already been conditioned for a higher level. See, a person with a more sedentary lifestyle doesn't have that reservoir. So how do you get started? Well, running is the most popular form of aerobic exercise. Cliff gave us a little demonstration this Lord's Day. You know, I was pretty impressed with those shoes, Cliff. You know, and I mean, you know, one garbage can of, you know, X running shoes, you know, poured over the stage. That was pretty good. And he said he had another one. You know, I have to do the same thing. I mean, it just, you know, now I have to run on gravel rather than pavement, you know, to protect my knees. And the only trouble with running on gravel is it wears your shoes out faster. Because that gravel's scraping all the time, see. But, see, there's alternatives like cycling, swimming, cross-country skiing, elliptical machines, brisk walking. See, whatever will get, actually, in order to really for it to function, you got to get the long limbs. You got to get both the arms and the legs moving. Because that's where your oxygen flow is going to come. Okay. Now, lifting weights isn't going to do this. Lifting weights isn't going to particularly challenge you aerobically. That's why most of the gyms, like, you know, Gold's Gym or others, they have a whole section they call cardio. Because the lifting the weights doesn't give you the cardio, it doesn't give you the aerobic stuff that you need. You know, it'll give you short-term bursts of power, and it'll give you some muscle mass and some body toning, but it won't give you the aerobic stuff that you need. So that's why they actually have that whole aerobic section there for the guys that want to do the complete job. And so another thing is you've got to enjoy the exercise or its benefits will be minimal. You know, if you say, I hate this, you know, I hate this, you know, every day I got to do this, you know, it's not going to do you much good. They did a study of some overweight sergeants in Sweden, and one group went at it positively, and the other did it with a sense of drudgery. It's really interesting. They put them both on a 1,400 calorie a day diet and put them through 3,000 calories a day exercise requirements. And the guys that went at it positively lost weight, and the guys that didn't lose weight. You know, the brain just shut down. And I guess the other guys did lose weight, but the guys that enjoyed it lost weight twice as quickly. And the negative group showed imperceptible improvements, increased lungs capacity and red blood cells. So attitude is a big factor. So to increase the brain fuel supply, all the studies show you got to do aerobic exercise minimum 30 minutes a day, minimum 4 days a week. 2 or 3 hours a week, you know, sometimes just won't get you there. It's going to cost you, well, let me put it this way, the 2 or 3 hours a week would be your 30 minutes a day. What you're thinking a lot of times is, I'm losing that. Well, you're going to gain it back and increase performance. So you start slow, you exercise the pace that allows conversation, you focus on what you can control, you find a way to work something in your routine. You know, a lot of people have varied schedules. That makes it tough. But aerobic exercise should be a higher priority than weightlifting or the other anaerobic forms. It's because of what it does for you. So you got to design your program. You got to create a play frame. You got to make a point to have fun at each phase. So, message, have fun in the physical, as it will give you benefits over on the other side too.